How have you not seen this?
If you've not seen this, as always, it's me, your host, Dustin Meadows. Today I'm joined by a special guest host, Danny Stratton.
Hello.
And our special guest, Lindsay Martin.
Hey, guys.
And we just watched Quentin Tarantino, his second feature film, following Reservoir Dogs, huge movie, definitely the one that sort of broke him into a more mainstream audience than Reservoir Dogs did, although Reservoir Dogs also a great film as well. This for me, I feel like it's kind of the Final Fantasy VII of Tarantino films, where I feel like
Explain.
Well, Final Fantasy VII was the first Final Fantasy that came out on PlayStation,
okay,
and that was kind of the gateway into that series for a lot of gamers who maybe didn't play it on the Nintendo, Super Nintendo, come up. And I feel like Pulp Fiction is kind of that equivalent, except Pulp Fiction holds up, Final Fantasy VII does not.
Okay.
So yeah, it was my first Tarantino film. It was the first one that I ever saw. And I was drawn into it, and I started checking out all the others. I think by the time I saw it, I think maybe Jackie Brown had just come out, but I went through everything and just fucking absolutely loved it. And I'll talk more about it later, but Tarantino's, like, his love of pop culture is one of the things that permeates his films, and it's something that very much interests me, and I think that's why I'm as drawn to these films as I am. I'm going to let Danny say a couple things. I know this is one of Danny's favorites as well.
Yeah, either 1A or 1B as far as favorite movies.
Okay.
I go back and forth between this and Fight Club. Both films I've probably seen close to 50 times at this point. Like, there was a real long time where Pulp Fiction was the movie that I fell asleep to. Like, I would put it on just because I'd seen it so many times and so familiar with it that I didn't have to really pay close attention.
Yeah,
I could check in and out and know roughly where.
I did that for a while too when I first bought it on VHS.
Yeah,
that was kind of my going to bed movie too.
Yeah,
cool. So now Lindsay, now you know a little bit about why me and Dave love it so much, and kind of a little bit about
it.
Kind of sculpture. Mm-hmm. In fact, how have you not seen this,
Lindsay? How have you not seen
this? I have not seen it. I don't know. I usually. I guess it's been on TV, and I had seen bits and pieces. The restaurant scene at the end, I was familiar with, and the Jack Rabbit Slims scene I had seen.
The dancing in the
restaurant. I don't like watching movies. I hate watching movies on TV because it messes up the flow of the movie, and especially a movie like this, the flow is so important to it.
Absolutely. And I assume you mean, like, you probably saw it, like, on USA or, like, TNT, like, so we've edited this shit too as well.
The flow to the movie is so important, and like the order and the keeping at the pace, because it has, like, especially with Tarantino movies, they have such a certain pace to them.
Yeah,
and when that's interrupted by like a Burger King commercial, I hate watching movies on TV, but especially a movie like that.
Yeah.
I hate.
Oh no, Mia Wallace snorting heroin. What's gonna happen?
Yeah.
Eat fresh.
The other thing is, like, with a movie like this, it isn't in chronological order.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like it'd be super tough to follow along.
Yeah. With commercial breaks, it'd be the worst.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, too, is, like, the majority of Tarantino's films are that way. Like, I think Jackie Brown is one of the only ones. Jackie Brown and Bastards. And I guess Django.
Yeah.
But, like, everything else, I feel like, jumps around a little bit. Death Proof doesn't do it, but Death Proof has some issues because of the way it runs. So about half his films are not done in chronological sequence.
Even he wrote True Romance, and he wrote that one in non-chronological order as well.
Man,
and
that would have been so weird.
There is a cut on YouTube of that film, the way he wrote it, out of chronological order.
Really?
That's so weird. The second episode of this podcast we did was True Romance. I love that. It's one of my favorite movies. With Kamari. Tarantino wrote it. Tony Scott directed it. It's one of the only Tony Scott movies that I really like, but it's fucking phenomenal. How did it end? Like, what was the last scene?
I don't remember. It's been a while since I watched the version he wrote, but
is it Gary Oldman saying, no, it's not White Boy Day?
Yeah. who or what is a Drexel? Dustin, I don't know what you're talking about.
Cool. So Lindsay, you liked it,
right? I loved it.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
The more, the further along it went, the even more I got into it. At first, because there's all these different scenes, and you're kind of like, what?
Yeah.
So many characters
What's
to follow.
The point? Like, why is this happening? But everything is so perfectly
yeah,
comes together.
Movie, yeah.
Yeah. And resolved.
I thought it was great.
Yeah, it's so cool. And again, it's what the great thing about Tarantino movies, just like Coen Brothers movies too, is like where like repeat viewings are rewarded.
Yeah.
And I fucking love that I can do that with a movie. Like this is what we talked about this. It's not something you actually see, but Danny, you'd mentioned that Butch is the one who keys Vincent Vega's car. In
yeah,
the film.
Yeah.
Bruce Willis' character, John Travolta.
And it's something that happens completely off screen.
Yeah.
And that you can't pick up on unless you've watched the movie. Like,
yeah, exactly. Because they have that very tense confrontation where
yeah,
he just stares at him and calls him a palooka.
Yeah.
But then you said that, and I was like, that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things. Lindsay, have you seen Reservoir Dogs? I'm assuming
I have not seen Reservoir
okay.
Dogs. No.
One of my favorite things. One of my favorite like fan theories. Because Steve Buscemi is in this movie as Buddy Holly,
yeah.
the waiter
yeah,
at Jack
yeah.
Rabbit's Lives, and he was Mr. Pink in Reservoir Dogs. And there's a lot of people that like want to believe that Steve Buscemi
same
in this
character.
Movie, yeah, is Mr. Pink. Like laying
like
low, like working
yeah.
as a waiter
yeah, yeah.
at like this themed restaurant, but it totally makes sense. And that's the other, like the other thing
the
I love
other,
about,
of course, Reservoir Dogs connection is that Vincent Vega, that's
yeah.
That is John Travolta's character. His brother is Michael Madsen's character in Reservoir
yeah,
Dogs,
Mr. Blonde,
which
okay.
is what it's Vega.
It yeah, I can't. I'm completely blanking.
I don't know. We can look it up. But
yeah, yeah. But
Tarantino actually
yeah.
wrote a script with those two brothers
yeah.
together, and he had it all finished and was getting ready to shoot it, but they just never, and it never like materialized, unfortunately. Where it was going to be those two brothers on like an island,
yeah.
years before, because in both films they die, but
yeah, yeah.
it was years before they both like
oh.
end up into this.
Yeah, and that's the thing too. Is like I love both of those characters. Like this honestly, this and Face Off are probably my favorite John Travolta roles.
He was
yeah.
great in this.
Oh,
yeah.
he's fucking amazing. And this was like, and of course the other big thing about this movie, this was kind of like his big comeback role too, because like he was obviously huge in the 70s with like Grease and Stayin' Alive, and then his career kind of like started faltering a little bit in the 80s, and then there wasn't a whole lot going on after that.
That's true.
And then
yeah.
Tarantino puts him in Pulp Fiction, and like he fucking
yeah.
kills it.
I've heard
in this movie.
Tarantino
so
talk
good.
About it, how like he was pretty much a dead star at that point, and he brought him back. And he said even like while he was filming it, like he'd go to lunch with Travolta, and they'd just be walking down the street, and it'd be just a mob of people still, even after all those years, just because of Grease and
because yeah.
all those movies that years earlier, people still loved him, but they just didn't have a thing to latch
yeah.
on to.
Yeah, and how do you think of after only seeing him in Grease and Saturday Night Fever, like? 15 years later,
yeah,
he would
such
be
a
great
different
for
role
this
too.
Part.
He's phenomenal.
And he killed it.
And that's the other thing too. Is like for like probably like a decade stretch, he made a career of playing criminals and villain
yeah.
type roles, for the most part. Some
there was a drag race scene in Grease.
Yeah,
Danny Zuko.
Danny Zuko was a bad boy.
Yeah,
Danny Zuko was probably doing the $500 a gram heroin.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going to Amsterdam when he could.
By the way, his name is Vic Vega.
Vic Vega, damn it. I knew it was
Vic,
a V.
Vic.
Yeah, yep. One of the other things I love about Tarantino movies, too, and there's been a lot written about this, too, is there's a lot of overlapping continuity like
yep.
within this universe. And I don't want to get into it too much because I assume you probably haven't seen a whole lot of the other
I
stuff.
Have seen the Kill Bill movies.
Okay, yeah, yeah. And there's
which I love.
There's an
well.
Overlap. The main one that I love is the Michael Park sheriff character.
Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah.
That is in Kill Bill and then a lot of other.
And he's in From Dusk Till Dawn and
yeah.
Death Proof and Planet Terror.
Yeah.
Yeah, great character. My favorite thing, I mentioned this in the beginning, that permeates in these films. Is Tarantino like is clearly a pop culture junkie,
yeah.
and obviously that's very much my thing too. Sometimes it's a little more heavy handed
mm-hmm.
than it is other times, but I love it. Like it's that genuine love, and he builds his universe is like around characters who exist around it. Because like at least up until Tarantino, you didn't really get that a lot in movies.
Yeah.
Like, and Kevin Smith, like, Clerks came out the same year Pulp Fiction did, so you started getting it to a different degree through that, too. And I like most Kevin Smith stuff, but I definitely prefer Tarantino, because I think it's more organic with Tarantino.
I think Kevin
yeah.
Smith would prefer Tarantino, too.
Yeah, very much so. But like even in period films, like Inglourious Basterds and Django, like there's still a reverence for even the pop culture of that era.
Yeah.
Like Christoph Waltz in Basterds talks about a couple of like silent film actresses that you're like, what the fuck is this? And you're like, oh, right, it is a Tarantino film.
Yeah, yeah.
And even in Django, there's like a reverence because Christoph Waltz's character talks about like Brunhilde, like, and talks about German folklore, which is the appropriate equivalent of what pop culture would be in that kind of era. And that carries through all of the movies. It's apparent, especially in the soundtracks for these movies.
The music was great.
Yeah. Tarantino's soundtracks are fucking on point for
every
movie.
I think this
is
the best one of them.
Yeah, Pulp Fiction is solid.
Yeah.
Like,
you got
a lot of movies,
Jungle Boogie.
You see the same songs for everything, like... They use the same songs for every situation.
Yeah, and and even songs like that are in this that get used. Like you've seen Jungle Boogie and several movies,
but
it's never used to the effect that it is in this.
And
movie.
It's usually now films copying Pulp Fiction.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Miserloo for the opening credits, which is so fucking good.
Sure. You got Al Green, Let's Stay Together.
Mm-hmm.
Lonesome Town by Rick Nelson. Son of a Preacher Man by Dusty Springfield.
Yeah, very good. Girl, You'll Be a Woman Soon by Urge Overkill.
Yep.
probably my favorite is Flowers on the Wall by the Statler Brothers.
Yep.
When Bruce Willis is driving down after he gets his watch back and then runs over Marcellus Wallace.
Yeah.
This movie and Big Lebowski have my favorite. Somebody just driving and singing along and having a good time to songs.
Yeah.
And then obviously Big Lebowski, the scene where the Jeff Bridges' character, the dude driving, listening to Looking Out My Back Door by CCR, just like pounding the roof and being happy. And then he
just
drops the joints and slaps
and
wrecks the car. And they're both shitty cars. Like, he's driving like a gremlin or something in this.
Rumble by Link Wray and the Rain.
Oh, yeah. That's the closing music.
Yeah,
that's a solid fucking track.
Yeah.
But, Tarantino's soundtracks are fucking phenomenal.
Sure.
Like, for all his faults, like, he makes great fucking movies.
Sure does.
The soundtracks are always on point.
Say that this is probably the best dialogue.
Oh, the dialogue
is
so
the script
good.
Is on
in
point.
Any movie. Not even just this, but just movies in general. Like, every line, every single conversation is so, like, on point and so funny and just...
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
There's some when I first got it, I think it was after the first time I'd seen it, I started watching it again, and I completely forgot about the scene with Bruce Willis and the cab driver.
Esmeralda.
Esmeralda de Villalobos or something.
Villalobos. Yeah. I think.
Yeah, because they had that exchange where she says what her name means, and he's just like, "I'm American. Our names don't
mean
shit."
And that's a character that's taken from like a short film that she played in.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, she played the same cab driver.
That's fucking awesome.
Yeah.
A scene like that, like you see that in another movie, and you're like, "This is pointless. Like, I don't give a shit." But they have that great dialogue, and you get like a great little line like, "I'm an American, our names don't mean shit," which is such a fucking amazing line.
And there are a lot of parts in that I feel like they could have just done like the, okay, we'll drive there and we'll get there. They could have shown them leaving and then shown them arriving, and it would have, quote unquote, saved like 15 minutes.
Sure.
But they showed you that journey, like that
trip
there,
and
they're having some interesting, bizarre conversation, but it's great.
There's well-written, well-acted conversations in cars.
Yeah, the other thing is, the first two scenes, the opening scene in the restaurant, and then the second scene with
when
Vincent and Jules going to the apartment saying, like, hey, we need shotguns.
Yeah.
The demeanor change in both sets of characters when they actually have to be badass versus have to be, like, conversational with their friend is unbelievable.
That shift is so good.
Yeah.
Well, and we mentioned this, too. Tarantino, like, always fucking knocks it out of the park on openings for his movies.
Yeah.
I know we talked, Bastards is one of my favorites. The fucking amazing scene with Christoph Waltz.
The French
Waltz
guy,
and
Jews hidden
in the
basement. The whole time.
And then, of course, this opening scene with Tim Roth and Amanda Plummer is Honey Bunny and Pumpkin is so fucking good.
Yeah, and all, the great thing is that it's separated. It's split into two. And you almost completely... Well, you don't almost. You do. You completely forget about these characters by the time you come back to read
them. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, and that's what I love, too. Because, like, the first time watching it, like, you see them, Jules and Vincent in that diner, and they're eating... And then it cuts, and you see Tim Ross saying, "Garcon, more coffee." And
yeah.
Like,
oh yeah.
What?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's fucking amazing. I'm so happy like you got to.
I loved
it.
I feel like
time.
It's one of those I'm excited to watch again.
Yeah. It
there
absolutely.
Have been a few movies like that, like Eternal Sunshine. Like when I saw that for the first time, I was like, "All right, I'm gonna need to watch this again because you just." There's so many more things I'm gonna pick up on.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
Tarantino movies like
I thought it was great.
Continue paying off.
Yeah,
what makes me want to go watch more?
Yeah,
Tarantino movies.
Seriously, they're all fucking phenomenal.
There was, I think like 2 years ago or so, it was the 20th or 25th anniversary of Reservoir Dogs coming out.
20th,
and they re-released Reservoir Dogs and Pulp Fiction in theaters, and I actually went and saw both those just because I wanted to see them in a theater with an audience, and it was amazing because. Not only did you get to see him with a crowd and like hear audiences react to this like the characters that they already love, which is very rare at a movie, but also Tarantino put trailers that he had like from his own personal collection because he collects like reels of movies and also of trailers. So there's these really old trailers that there's like no other like there's probably like one or two other reel of that exists in the world, and they were just fantastically bizarre,
very Tarantino shit.
Like campy and still like just craziness, and you get to see them in the little sizzle reels and everything like
the
burn marks
that's the thing. I feel like a script like that has the potential in the wrong hands to go so wrong.
Yeah.
Like, it has the potential to be, like, so campy and just go so wrong. It's one of those things that has to be just...
Yeah, the right balance.
Just the right balance.
Yeah. Well, it's so crazy, too, to look at this movie 20 years later. Like, even to look at the cast.
Yeah.
Like, in the directions that they've gone into. It's like, John Travolta's career, like, he had that revival.
Yeah,
and
for a little while.
It's not, like, I mean, he still works... But I don't think he's done anything since it really measures up to Pulp Fiction by any stretch. Samuel L. Jackson gets work, but like for the same time, like Sam Jackson at this point is like almost on the verge of self-parody.
Yeah, he's playing like Snakes on a Plane. He's
basically
like Snakes
on a Plane. Well, and he cut like he's in like 5 or 6 movies a year. Like half of them are, like go straight to DVD.
He's just
or
playing
or
Samuel
or
L. Jackson,
and the ones that we care about are him with an eye patch playing Fury.
Yeah, exactly. Like, out of all the people in this movie, like, I think Uma Thurman's done the best.
Yeah.
Like, Kathy Griffin is also in the movie.
Well, and she's, technically she's in 2 movies that Tarantino's involved in, because she's in a movie called 4 Rooms.
Yeah.
Which is, like, an anthology series, and he directed one of the vignettes for it, and she's in that. Tim Roth as well, who played Pumpkin.
Yeah.
And it's important, too, because, like, Tim Roth hasn't. Like, he's been in stuff sporadically.
The main character in Reservoir Dogs, and he's in this for literally one scene.
Yeah, yeah. And then, like, everything after that, like, he was the bad guy in Rob Roy.
Yeah.
He was in that movie with Tupac.
How can we forget The Incredible Hulk?
Oh, I was just about to say The Incredible Hulk. I do love him in The Incredible Hulk. He is really good as Emile Erskine, whatever the fuck his character's name is. Yeah,
bullshit.
Yeah. And then he had a TV show for it. Was a couple years, the Lie to Me or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah. Good for Tim.
Yeah. But Ving Rhames is definitely like he's sort of become kind of a B-lister.
Bruce Willis has done well.
Yeah.
But not like everyone in this movie is fucking amazing.
Yeah.
And then you've got like a lot of character actors too. Like I think it's Peter Green that plays Zed. And the only things that I remember him from is The Mask. He's the bad guy, and that he's Dorian. I'm pretty sure he's in Under Siege 2 Dark Territory, the one where they're on a train. Probably the only other good movie he's in The Usual Suspects very briefly for like a scene. It's weird, like he's just one of those actors who pops up every now and then that we're in something great and then you'll catch him every now and then and be like, oh, yeah, yeah, you put on the mask and you were an evil mask.
Yeah.
You tried to fight Jim Carrey.
Well, Buscemi and Walken are doing well for themselves.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's very true. Yeah.
There are so many people in this, you just forget
about
it.
Yeah, yeah, the cast is fucking insane. We have
Christopher Walken just has that one,
that
song, that's what I love.
The monologue. That scene is so good.
These huge stars, and they're like, we're just going to give you, you get three minutes.
That's the same as his role in True Romance, too. Like, he's literally in one scene. That's maybe 5 minutes, and it's him and Dennis Hopper, and it's one of my favorite scenes in any movie ever. It's such a fucking amazing scene, and I actually I had to go to the bathroom really bad, and I just sat there squirming. I was I was not leaving before Christopher Walken's scene was over.
No,
I was like, I've seen the cab scene. It's a good scene. If there's a scene that I can miss to go to the bathroom, it's the cab scene. But I'm not missing Christopher Walken's monologues currently.
Oh, it's
doing.
Great.
Would I watch up his ass?
Yeah. 5 miserable years.
That could grab that watch pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You gotta rinse that off first, man.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's
would
such
ruin
a
the
great
watch?
Fucking scene.
That's what I was thinking about.
Yeah.
What's that?
How much could you wash that watch without ruining it?
They probably have, alcohol wipes
or
something.
Yeah, you could
use
something.
Take it to a watch.
Yeah, take it to a kangaroo.
Yeah, kangaroo. but it's fucking phenomenal. One of the things I'd never caught before, Lizzie, I don't know if you noticed this, the first time you see Marcellus Wallace is when he's talking to Butch, Bruce Willis's character.
You see the Band-Aid
and he's
on
got
the back.
The Band-Aid on the neck.
Yeah.
And then in the pawn shop scene, he doesn't have it. And I never caught that before. But you can probably explain this better than I can. The obvious
is it because of the time?
Well, time had passed, but also the big red herring of the movie is what's in the suitcase.
And Tarantino said he's never going to say what it is.
Yeah.
But there's theories like that it's Elvis's suit is one theory.
His soul is another popular one.
Because the briefcase, the combination is 666.
Yeah.
And there's also some weird tie-in that,
your soul, escapes through your neck or something.
Yeah, which would explain the Band-Aid.
Yeah.
And that Marcellus Wallace is essentially a representation of the devil.
Yeah.
Oh.
And then it's gone after he gets his soul back, chronologically within the movie. So that was really cool. And
so we never know what's
before.
In the suitcase. Yeah. I was wondering that, too.
But I love it, too, because,
light
that's,
bulb.
Something I wrote down.
It was one of those things they put in the rotisserie chicken thing at the Kroger's.
Another theory is that it's gold from the... what is the place that holds all the gold?
Fort Knox.
Fort Knox. And it's bricks of gold from there.
And that's what I love, too, is that it can do this. And honestly, by the end of the movie, you almost kind of forget about it. You don't really give a shit what's in it.
Yeah.
You just know it's important, and that's all that really matters.
And I love in movies, I hate when people complain. I was like, oh, well, I wanted to know what it was. It's like, who gives a shit?
Yeah.
I think
it's
whatever.
More interesting if you don't
know.
Yeah.
If you don't know. If they told you, it's like in Signs when they show you the alien.
Yeah,
and you're
this
is...
No, who cares?
Why did you do that?
It's and a lot of movies kind of blow their wad that way, too. Where, it's gotten to a point where we feel like we have to have everything explained away to us. It's just like Cloverfield, which is a movie that a lot of people are on the fence about. I like Cloverfield a lot, in spite of its faults. And the people bitching were like, oh, we don't get to see the monster. That's bullshit. I was like, no, it's so much scarier. And it's just like the Jaws effect, too, where you don't see the monster until almost the end of the movie.
Yeah, and it makes
and
it
then
more
you
effective.
See it that much. And then in Super 8, the film J.J. Abrams did after Cloverfield, people were like, oh, well, you see the alien too much. It's like, fuck you. You're the same people
what
complaining
do you
about
want?
It. And it doesn't matter. And I hate that we feel like we have to have everything explained away to us. Like we have to have our hand held through a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a lot of the things left to the imagination, it makes it better almost.
Yeah, absolutely.
Can I bring up 2 points?
Yes, please.
Is that Tarantino, the part that he actually plays in the movie as an actor.
Yeah, Jimmy.
Which is Jimmy, was not the original part that he was going to play.
What part was he going to play?
He was originally going to be Lance, the drug dealer.
Oh, okay.
That Eric Stoltz played. And if you watch the movie and know that and listen to Eric Stoltz deliver the lines, he sounds exactly like Tarantino delivering the lines.
Yeah.
And it almost sounds like he's doing an impersonation.
That's funny.
That's so awesome. That makes complete fucking sense, too.
And the other point I wanted to bring up is that every single time that Vincent Vega, John Travolta's character, goes to the bathroom in this movie, something really bad happens.
Yeah,
that's true.
He goes to the bathroom three times. The first time is when he's with Mia Wallace on the date.
Yep,
he comes back, she OD'd. The second time
in
the movie, he goes.
The last time
is when he goes in to the bathroom of Butch's house, or his apartment rather, and he comes out and he gets shot and killed after the toaster pastries come back flying up. And then the third and final time, chronologically, throughout the way the movie's set up, is the restaurant scene. He goes to the restaurant, the bathroom, and then comes out, and
So the lesson here is never,
never
go to the bathroom. Don't go to the bathroom.
And I believe
that sounds like the worst Goosebumps book.
And two out of the three times he says what he's going to go do in the bathroom, too.
Yeah.
He's very blunt.
Yeah.
Well, the middle time there was no one around to hear him.
Yeah. He said it, though.
Yeah.
He told the walls.
One of the other things, I noticed it before, there was obviously sexual tension between Vincent and Mia's character.
Yeah.
Sure.
I never noticed, just how defeated he looked when, after they had that moment, after he brings her home, he's like, I'm just gonna go take a piss. He's being cool. And she's like, too much information.
Yeah.
But she says it, in a real cunty,
awkward
way. And then, he just looks so hurt by it.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't think he was gonna fuck you regardless, but, come on.
Now he really knows.
Yeah.
He's I really blew it.
He was so sad about it.
The other, when they first meet, he's on a heroin fucking...
He's doped up.
And she just did coke.
Yeah.
So they're just two fucking high people
for
the first time.
The entire course of their evening is spent on drugs.
Yeah.
And then she re-ups at the bathroom at the
Jack
Rabbit.
She powers her nose. She wasn't lying.
One of my only fucking gripes with this movie... is the right when they pull up to Jackrabbit Slim's, and he's trying to convince her to go somewhere else.
The square?
Yes!
You don't like the square?
It's not a square, it's a rectangle!
It's a parallelogram.
It's always bothered me. It's so weird. I do like that, you get, the dotted outline when she traces it, but then it's a rectangle. It's don't be a rectangle.
Squares?
The rectangle
the
is
squares
wrong.
Squares are not
rectangles. Rectangle.
I was
it's
thinking
one.
That
it's
too.
Squares are not rectangles, but rectangles are squares. There's one, but I don't
it's
remember.
It's parallelograms is in there.
Oh,
yeah, it too.
Rhombus.
Not all.
No,
a
rhombus
not
has
all
five. No, a rhombus has four sides.
Rhombus has four sides.
Yeah.
So a rectangle.
I'm
gonna
major in shapes.
And a square are a rhombus.
I'm gonna look it up. So not all idiots.
Square is
it's one of the only things
square
that I remember. I know it's not a trapezoid. I know,
no,
it's not, I know it's
not
a not
a Pizza Hut roof.
Yeah, I know it's not a dodecahedron. But I'm pretty sure it's a rhombus. It's a shape with four sides.
Let me see here.
You can blame Uma Thurman. She probably just did it and they were like, well, we have to...
Yeah, you got to cut that in.
Yeah.
A square is a subset of a rectangle, so all squares are rectangles.
Huh.
That's so weird. Fuck you, Tarantino, for making me think about math, you son of a
squares
bitch.
Squares and that's shapes.
Yeah. Well, geometry. A subset of math. Look, not all geometry
like
is math,
either.
But not all math is geometry.
I don't like shapes either.
Yes to all shapes.
I don't bother with them.
That, man, that's, It doesn't.
Sometimes
but
just
it's
get
the
you
coolest goddamn restaurant ever, Dustin.
Oh, that restaurant is cool. I love the restaurant.
Yeah.
It,
how
it,
bad do you want to go eat at Jack Rabbit?
So bad. I want a car seat there.
I
get,
love that car.
Yeah.
That
really
whole
want
thing
to,
is so fucking cool.
The
and
little
that
racetrack.
Yeah. And have fucking Richard Nixon as the major D there.
Yeah.
That milkshake is
I
want to
see
really
a
good
movie about that person playing Nixon. Because most times when you see, somebody doing an impression or an impersonation, it's very broad, very caricature, but his was real subtle, who played him in Frost Nixon? Was that Franklin Jella that was Nixon?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. It was a very realistic portrayal.
Yeah.
As opposed to what you would see in an SNL sketch
or
even
a
on Futurama.
Yeah.
Which is fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
But but it's really great to see. Yeah. But it's really cool to see whatever actor this is in this movie playing it very subtle, and doing the mannerisms the hands and the elbow and the crook of the arm and everything. But it's so fucking cool. And again, that's another
I'll
moment.
I'll buy a $5 milkshake. I don't care.
Oh, the milkshake looks really good.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Dude,
yeah.
Milkshakes are fucking awesome.
They are.
I love milkshakes. And that's another movie too, where obviously Tarantino's fucking pop culture boner. shows up. Like, he's taking that second to remind us, like, I know some things about popular culture.
Yeah.
That's not Marilyn Monroe. That's, fuck, who was it?
Well, look it up.
Damn it, I can't believe I'm blanking on it. Mina, Dina,
I think
Tina?
It's Mimi.
Mimi Van Dorn, that's what it was. Yeah,
He also has the comment about so-and-so has the night off.
Yeah, Jane Mansfield.
Yeah,
which was great. And then we see James Dean, obviously. We see two Zorros.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the best Steve Buscemi is Buddy Holly.
I didn't realize he was Buddy Holly until I saw the credits at the end.
Yeah. Well, he walks up. Like,
he also says Buddy Holly's not much of a waiter.
Yeah. Well, then he walks up, he's like, I'm Buddy Holly, your waiter.
Well, I mean, I realized it was Buddy Holly.
Yeah.
But I didn't realize Steve Buscemi was playing him.
Yeah, it's
also,
definitely... I don't think I caught it until my third time watching it.
There's also Jerry Lewis, a
Dean...
Yeah, the Rat Pack
What did
was
he
there.
Say, Peggy Sue? He called her Peggy Sue.
Yeah, he called,
called
Uma Thurman Peggy
Philip
Sue.
Philip Morris Page, Ricky Nelson.
Ricky Nelson was playing guitar when they walked in. Because I thought it was Elvis the first time I watched it. I was like, no, that's not Elvis.
There's also an Ed Sullivan.
Oh, I missed the Ed Sullivan.
Yeah, I want to go to Jackrabbit's.
But yeah, that's... Is that an actual restaurant that exists?
No, they made that up.
Probably not made one,
man,
like...
That's such a tragedy. I'm sure there are probably places like it, but probably not nearly to that scale.
No. It's like teenagers...
Like, that's what fucking Hard Rock Cafe should be instead of just sucking.
Playing Hollywood, come on.
Yeah. Like, no, we'll put Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top's guitar on the wall. That's good enough,
right? Yeah, it's just a TGIF Fridays.
Hey,
like,
man, the guys from Trapped were here once. They signed a bass drum head.
Oh, man, let me see it.
Headstrong, I'll take you on.
Take my picture next to it, Dustin.
Oh, you want the filter exhibit. Oh, man, I'm trying to think of some other things that we haven't hit on yet. Like we said, there's a lot of great... like very small roles. Fucking Harvey Keitel as Winston Wolfe.
Yeah.
So good. Maybe 8 minutes of screen time. Top
yeah.
It's
great.
That.
Really one of, and also one of the most interesting characters.
Yeah.
Just
that
like,
job just exists.
Yeah, he's just a fixer.
Yeah.
That's all his job is. It's just they call him, he has all the details, he's very serious. Wherever he's at, it doesn't matter.
Yep.
He's like, I'm gonna go fix this. And he's also at a party at fucking 8 AM in
the
morning.
Yeah.
Just a cocktail party.
So, and that's another one. Like, because every time I saw it before this time, and you made that comment, I always thought it was like a wake or something. And then I was like, that's pretty early for a funeral, though. Even.
Yeah.
And then you made that comment. I was like, oh, no, they're wearing blue. This is not a funeral.
No.
We also like the board games and the
I noticed
that too.
Operation in Life.
I think this was the first time I actually even noticed that.
Yeah.
And they were out in the living room like they had been recently played.
Yeah.
Like, they were very clearly set there to drive home what was about to happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's my favorite line of the whole movie is, what do I have to stab a 3 times?
Yeah, yes. It's so good.
That's a great scene.
Yeah.
Oh, it's, yeah, that's...
And you can totally feel the tension.
Yeah, like...
They do a great job of not rushing it and pacing it very well. And then the shot of, I think, Trudy for no real reason, just kind of excited to see what happens.
Yeah.
Because she has no real involvement in it.
No. Well, and then, again, like, I... Like you, Danny, I've seen this scene countless times.
Yeah.
But I'm still, like, I'm on edge.
Yeah.
I know exactly what's going to happen, but, oh, man.
Yeah.
They're so good at
the sound. The thump.
Yeah.
Like when it pierces her breastplate.
Oh, man.
I don't know how you get that sound, but great job whoever did that.
She recovered pretty well. She, like, went home and was...
Yeah.
I like that they didn't talk also on the drive back. There's no dialogue.
They're just
staring straight ahead.
Yep.
Kind of processing what the hell
just
happened.
I imagine that's probably how it would go down.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And there's one other scene that I wanted to comment on the sound. Oh, it's when Butch is walking back up to his apartment. There's no music.
Yeah.
And all you just hear is
like
children playing, like a dog barking, just neighborhood sounds. And then when he puts his key in the key slot of the door to open up his apartment, every sound kind of gets magnified, and you just realize how, like, on edge and how careful he has to be not to make too much noise.
That's so good. And that, and I love, too, that that tracking shot of him parking the car and, like, crossing through another block.
Yeah, it's like all
before.
One continuous shot.
Yeah. So fucking good.
Whole Bruce Willis story, I love that.
It's... That's the tragedy, too, is, like, this is one of the last, like, really great things that he did. Diary of the Vengeance came out the following year, which I love. and then Sixth Sense and Unbreakable would follow within like the next 5 or 6 years.
Moonrise Kingdom, Dustin Meadows.
I don't think he's in it enough for me to really count that.
He was on a few episodes of Friends.
Like, yeah. I don't think he's bad in it, but it's, I don't know. It's about, and it's largely because the quality, just like the quality of the Die Hard franchise.
What about
is going
Lucky
down so
Number 11, Dustin?
I've actually never seen Lucky Number 11.
He's good in that.
Yeah.
Guess what? He plays an assassin.
Oh, that makes sense.
He's either a cop or an assassin.
Wait. No, never mind. I'm thinking of that fucking movie, Smoking Aces. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, he's not in that.
Yeah, no, I've seen Smoking Aces. That's
even in Moonrise Kingdom, he has to play a cop.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
even when you're in a goddamn Wes Anderson movie,
yep.
You're typecast.
All right, you're a cop. Could you maybe play by your own rules, but quirky rules? Like all of your socks go up to your knees.
Yeah. Perhaps like you're a cartoon character in a kid's movie.
Yep. Or Bruce Willis, How the Mighty Have Fallen. But yeah, this is definitely like, and it's again, I think this and John McClane are my favorite Bruce Willis performances too.
Mm-hmm.
I
also think Sin City deserves a.
I forgot, first Sin City.
Yeah.
Oh my god!
Aren't there like 7 more of them? I haven't seen.
There's only one more, but it just came out.
It's
and
garbage.
It's pretty.
Oh,
shitty.
The new one
that
just came out.
Yeah.
I almost felt bad that I missed the first 5 minutes of it, and then I watched the rest of it, and I was like, I can't possibly imagine the first 5 minutes was much better than
I was there for
saw.
The first 5 minutes, Dustin, you are alright.
Yeah.
It was good, but not...
Is it just trying to be the first movie again?
It feels very rushed. Like,
yeah,
it also...
It feels
like
a money grab.
Yeah, like, way too much time has passed. Because originally, like, they were supposed to do it, like, back in 2007, like, within 2 years of the first one coming out,
because
the first one did so well. And then it just kept getting put off, and then Rodriguez did Machete, and I was like, all right, fine. Just Sin City 2 is not going to happen. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
But also, like, Frank Miller became more heavily involved. Motherfuck Frank Miller. I hate him so goddamn much. He's such an asshole.
Still looks really cool. But
yeah,
it is terrible.
Like, aesthetically, it's fucking gorgeous.
I didn't even know that.
And that's
I didn't even know Brolin was playing the same character as Clive Owen for the first one until after I went home after the movie.
No
I didn't realize it watching the movie.
Because
it didn't really matter.
Yeah, no, it didn't. And I was disappointed that he didn't just turn into Clive Owen after that point. But, yeah.
More about Sin City 2. Go.
Yeah. if you got a choice of watching one movie with Bruce Willis this week, Pulp Fiction
Make
is on
Pulp
Netflix.
Fiction.
Save your goddamn money and don't go see Sin City 2. Maybe Robert Rodriguez will make another Machete that doesn't suck instead of doing Sin City 3 or whatever.
I think also I remember Tarantino saying how he got Willis to agree, because at the time, like, Die Hard's already out, and he's, like, this huge star.
Yeah.
And he actually agreed to do it for, like, scale.
Yeah, yeah. Because
he sent him the script, and he read the script, and he's like, I'll play whatever part you want.
Yeah.
Because I think he originally read for Vincent Vega, and he's like, nah, I already got somebody for that.
Yeah.
And then he agreed to be Butch just because he was like, I want to end this movie.
Everyone was
great
for the part, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, I don't think that you could have casted any better. I don't think you could have rotated anyone with other actors and made it better. Like,
John Travolta was good at being kind of aloof and...
Yeah.
When and just, like, the speed that he goes from, like, cool to indignant over little shit. Like, he's so good at that.
Yeah.
And that Sam Jackson...
Or Bruce Willis? Or
John Travolta.
Yeah.
But, I mean, both of them, though. Like, because Bruce Willis has those moments, too, where, like, he's fine... And then he flies off the handle, and then, like, he's walking out, and he's, like, apologizing to his girlfriend. And then, like, 2 seconds later, he's yelling and swearing and punching the
roof.
Who
hasn't done that? You're...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's okay. Then you get in the car, and you're, like, fucking lost.
Yeah, so
good.
Punching the steering wheel.
Yeah. Is there anything else that we want to hit?
I'd like to remark more Bruce Willis movies that came after this that are good. Unbreakable.
Yeah, I said Unbreakable.
Sixth Sense.
That has my favorite.
Element?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck
Fifth
Element.
Element!
I can't believe I forgot Fifth Element.
Yeah. I'll also go a whole Nine Yards.
I've not seen that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Nine Yards is also like that falls within that. That what was that pre 2002.
It was nine. It was 2000.
Okay. Yeah. Whole 10 Yards is dog shit.
Yeah.
But
no argument here.
But that's not in. That's not all on.
Also,
here,
12 Monkeys.
Oh, 12 Monkeys. I have not seen.
Oh my god, Dustin.
I know, I need to.
How have you not seen it?
Question for another episode.
Tables have turned.
Yes, they
Yeah, I guess we'll
go
ahead.
I give it 2 thumbs up.
Yeah, we'll wrap it up. We're going to do our favorite moment or our favorite scene from the movie. So, start with you, Lindsay.
Well, that's tough. That last scene, that was great. Samuel L. Jackson's little monologue.
The diner,
The gun up to the guy.
I think it kind of brings it all home.
And then when Bruce Willis goes back and, He goes back in that room where everyone's being... The guy's
sodomized.
Being sodomized,
yeah,
and just kills everybody. Like the violence and...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll give little moment, and then I'll give scene. Little moment, I love the wolf drinking the cup of coffee and no words, but just going, Like,
yeah,
raising
like
the cup.
Like cat tipping the jimmy.
Like, yeah, that is pretty
good.
Yeah. And favorite scene, I'll go the introduction of Vincent Vega and Jules.
Yeah.
Where that whole exchange in the car and the whole about going and getting
shotguns.
Yeah, and the Big Mac and not going into a Burger King and just the whole walk up and the foot massage and all that stuff. It's just fantastic.
I agree with that. I think probably my favorite little moment is the very first time that Butch and Vincent Vega meet. It's like maybe 20 seconds long, but like you get so much tension, and it's so great to see that payoff later when Bruce Willis kills him. And then I probably agree with you on your favorite scene. It's I would say it's a toss up between that very first scene with them driving, and then, of course I always love the we should have fucking shotguns for this.
Yeah.
And when they actually get into the apartment, because there's so many fucking
also,
great lines.
My favorite line that gets a laugh out of me every single time to this day is, "Ah, man, I just shot Marvin in the face."
Yes,
oh, that is great. You don't
it's
expect
such
that
a
at
great
all.
Line. No, it comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, you must hit a bump. I hit no bump.
I love too. Like, it's not like, oh fuck, bring your eyes. Like, he says it the way you would if you accidentally threw a baseball through the window in your house.
Yeah.
Oh, I was cheering for Marvin. I was hoping he got out.
Yeah, yeah. Phil Lamar.
Yeah.
Who later reprised that same role in a Mad TV sketch.
Yeah. That's what he's from.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's Hermes Conrad on
Futurama.
Futurama.
Oh.
He's Samurai Jack.
Oh, hey.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will always love... Oh, I'm sorry. Did that break your concentration?
Yeah. By the way, the guy who's that he calls Flock of Seagulls, I believe he's a stand-up comic.
Oh, no shit.
Flock
That's
of
awesome.
Seagulls.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know his name or anything, but... Yeah,
and that man was Paul F. Tompkins.
Yep.
Cool. I think we're going to wrap it up.
Yep.
This is going to be the second episode in an ongoing series leading up to September's Struck a Nerve, the Pop Culture Mixtape. The Quentin Tarantino, I'm sorry, did I break the concentration edition?
Mm-hmm.
September 15th at Wild Goose. Check that out and stay tuned for more Tarantino movies on How Have You Not Seen This. Thank you, Danny, for hosting.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, man. Lindsay, thank you so much for coming
Thanks
on and watching Pulp Fiction with us. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Join us next time as we jump into the Quentin Tarantino-Robert Rodriguez collaboration From Dusk Till Dawn. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes if you haven't already. Like the page on Facebook. Leave us a review on iTunes. It helps us, gives us a little bit more attention, hopefully increases the listenership. If you have any questions, send them to howhaveyounotseenthispodcast@gmail.com. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks.